Welcome to Donor Audio Interview 2928.
Identify a person who had a significant influence on you and explain the influence.
I would say a person who had a significant influence on me would probably, or the most significant influence at least, would be my mother. I was raised by a single mother, and so I think that made us a lot closer than a lot of maybe a kid in a two-parent household will be with one of the parents, just because I was, you know, always with her. I say the most, you know, significant influence that I got from her was just my mother has a really wicked, sarcastic sense of humor. And I think a lot of my sense of humor comes from, you know, there as a kid sitting watching TV or something and having my mom kind of crack jokes about what's on TV. And so I think that's one of the things that I really credit to her is just, I think my mother is just one of the funniest people I know. And a lot of, you don't hear that, people say that very often about their mother, but that's mine. And so that's, I think, the most important influence from her to me in that respect.
What do you aspire to be?
That's a big question, but I think mostly I aspire to be a person who is, you know, successful in their professional life and endeavors. You know, I want to be a professor, and I want to be a good one, basically, both in research and teaching. And but beyond that, I want to be, you know, just a good friend and a good partner to someone, and you know, basically someone who's loyal and who's honest, I think.
How would you describe yourself as a human being?
As a human being, I would say I'm a good person to be friends with, even though I'm not the most outgoing person who makes a lot of friends. So I would describe myself as very loyal, and as the kind of person who puts others first, above myself usually. But at the same time, I can be hard to get to know sometimes, so I can be a difficult person to strike up a conversation with and to meet casually. But once once we become friends, you basically have a lifetime friend. So that, I think, is probably the best way I can describe myself.
Describe the world you come from and how that world shaped who you are.
Well, like I said a little bit, I'm basically a child of a single parent. My father wasn't around for a lot of my early life, not until maybe I was six or seven did I, you know, grow up with him. And so a lot of my interactions were with my mother's extended family. So it was grandparents and aunts and uncles. And we were kind of, I guess, just like a pretty typical, for a lot of people, you know, at the time I thought I was middle class, but you know, and looking back, you know, I think, you know, a single parent raising me, that we kind of struggled by a lot of the times. And so I think, you know, kind of in retrospect, that's kind of the world that I was shaped by, was why someone who was a lot of the times, you know, having to work full time and take care of a child and do all the work at home was a lot of times tough on my mom. And I think one of the ways that shaped me was just kind of like, she had a lot of determination and resilience to be able to deal with that situation, and I kind of picked that up as a kid, so that way when, you know, I face difficult situations, I don't really usually kind of feel a lot of strain from the pressure, but just because I'm kind of used to seeing people kind of overcome those difficulties and things like that ever since I was a child.
Does any specific attribute, quality, or skill distinguish you from everyone else? How did you develop this attribute?
I don't think I'm probably all that different from everyone else. I think one of the, I guess if I was going to pick something, I would say that, this is going to sound a little strange, but I tend to find the connections and the ideas behind different people's beliefs, and I have a kind of knack for making people, just when I talk to them, particularly in like a serious conversation, making them see the different sides to the issues that maybe they didn't think about before. So I think a lot of times I'm very curious, and I like to think through different ideas, and sometimes, you know, people say that they learn something new about their own ideas and stuff just from talking to me.
What do you think are the most admirable qualities a person can have, and why?
I think number one for me, because I think without this, you can't really have other qualities and then be as good as they could be. is being honest to yourself and to other people, but particularly to yourself, because I think the way a lot of bad things happen and the way a lot of people continue to act in bad or wrong ways is that they're not honest with what they're doing. And people make excuses for themselves or rationalizations to help them to continue to do whatever it is they're doing. And I think taking a step back and being honest with yourself about what you're getting into, and then also having just the strength and the wherewithal to make changes when you've hit a dead end, or when you step back and you realize that you're going down the wrong direction and your dealings with other people or whatever it is, having the ability and the humility, I guess, also to say, well, I need to make a change. I've made a mistake here. And I think that's very difficult for a lot of people.
What quality do you like best in yourself, and what do you like least?
The thing that I like best about myself is that when I you know, hear or experience situations in which people are, you know, this is a big word, but maybe being oppressed, or people who are being mistreated and things like that, that it still, you know, for me stirs like an emotional response, and then also like a call to action against that. So I think I have not yet succumbed to the cynicism that a lot of people have that says kind of, there's nothing you can do about it, don't try to change anything. So I still have the kind of naive hope that maybe the world can change and that we can do things better than we have.
What quality would you most like to see flourish, and which would you like to see wither?
The quality I'd most like to see flourish, I think, would be just that idea of loyalty. I think it's important that when people, when you establish bonds with people, that means something. But on the other side, the one I'd like to see wither is, I think, like the bad side to that for me. It's just this idea that, you know, I don't make friends easily. And maybe it's because I want to be loyal to those friends and I don't want to have too many, but it's often people come away. A lot of times people who have gone on to be my best friends will say that they thought I didn't really like them at first because I wasn't very forthcoming and I wasn't very quick to start up a conversation and things like that. So they just assume, well, I didn't want to be their friend. But so I think maybe that was something I'd like to see change.
What kind of values did your parents instill in you that you would like to pass on to your own children?
If I were to have children, I think I would want them to have a lot of, not so much specific values that my parents passed on to me, but I think the values that I got were a kind of openness and tolerance. And it was, if you treat people right, and if you follow the kind of basic rules of ethics and morality, you know, you don't kind of make special exceptions for yourself and think, well, I can do this, but other people can't. But as long as you play by, I guess, the basic rules, that you're free to be the person that you feel that you are and that you want to be. And so that whatever it is that drives you, or like whatever it is that makes you happy as an individual, that's what you should follow, not some specific, you know, way that you have to go. And then, you know, everyone's going to be different, and your children could very well turn out to be very different than you and what you think that they should or were going to turn out to be. And so I think just the value that I got, and, you know, I'm very, very different from both of my parents, but I never got the sense that they felt I should have done something else and been more like maybe what they had imagined. So,
tell me how you like to spend time with your family.
It's kind of a two-part answer because, you know, I basically have two very different sides to my family. The number one way that I spend time with my father is to travel. I'm very rarely, you know, through my life do I see him where we're at his house only. He's he travels for work, and so that's always been incorporated in with the things that we do. And so the main way I spend time with him and with his side of the family is through traveling, going to baseball games, which is one of our favorite things to do. So we'll go to different cities and go to baseball games when he's there and things like that. The main way that I would spend time with my mother and my mother's side of the family is exactly the opposite, which is they are complete homebodies. So it would be, you know, having people come over, maybe going out to eat And other than that, it's staying home, watching television, talking, and things like that. So,
tell me about the most cherished present you ever received for your birthday or holiday, and tell me why this gift was so special.
I guess I probably was into toys and gifts and things like that as a kid, but as a young child. But most of the time, I've never been like very into material things or gifts and things like that. So I would have to say probably the best gift that I've ever received. It's not really a thing at all, but was when I was maybe 13 years old. My dad and I went on a trip, and we went and drove all the way out west through Yellowstone and through Seattle, and then all the way down the California coast, and all the way out there kind of hitting all the baseball stadiums and going to baseball games. And that was kind of like a 13-year-old kid's dream, to go to all these, you know, baseball stadiums and go on this big trip with his dad and things like that. And that was basically kind of like a birthday present. So I'd say that was probably my best gift.
Tell me about some activities you enjoyed in your childhood.
I spent most of my childhood outdoors. And so the things that I enjoyed most were things like climbing trees and playing baseball and playing soccer as a kid. And I was also one of those kids that would never be happy with the rules of the game. So I was one of those that would make up our own games, our own kind of kickball, basketball hybrids and things like that, and so playing some of my invented games and things like that, that would probably be some of my best memories as a child.
What is your favorite book? What types of books do you enjoy?
My all-time favorite book is The Tin Drum by Günter Grass, and I tend to enjoy, for some reason, I don't, and this is odd, I don't normally enjoy books that were first written in English. I found all my favorite books are in translation or in the language that I can read. And so I tend to enjoy books that have a realistic tone, but then all sorts of unrealistic and fantastic things happen in them. So things like Marquez, and it's a very realistic story, and then people go by on flying carpets and things like that. I like that kind of fantastic, and the fantasy and the reality elements just blended together like there's no distinction between the two.
What is your favorite word and why?
My favorite word, this one is a tough one, because on any given day, I could have a different favorite word. But I think my all-time favorite word, very simple word, and I'm not going to pick a fancy one, is freedom. Because I think I've studied philosophy, and it's a word that sounds so simple, and we all think we know what it means, but when we get into what it really means, it's a very difficult word to define. But it's also so very important that it seems like it's something that everybody wants. Everybody wants to be free, but it means very, very different things to different people. And so I like how this one simple word that we all think we know is got this whole life of its own and makes it difficult to use between two different people and know that we're talking about the same thing. I think that's interesting.
What was the last book you read, movie you saw, sporting event you attended?
Interestingly enough, the last book I read was a new book by Günter Grass, which was called, I guess the English translation of it would be too far afield, or like too far away would be the English translation of the book. And it was very good. It was about kind of like after the reunion of East and West Germany. So it was an interesting novel. The last movie I saw, it's been a little bit longer for that. Let me think about that. I'd say the last movie, it's one I'd seen before, but the last movie I actually sat down and watched would be A Clockwork Orange, which is a classic Kubrick movie, which I really love. The last sporting event I attended, that could be a while ago, just because I've been traveling in and out of the country. I'd probably say the last sporting event I attended was a football game.
What do you do for fun? What are your hobbies?
For fun, I basically, if I'm going to be by myself for fun. You know, I will read for fun, and I will watch movies. I've really gotten into watching, to getting television shows that I missed before, and sitting down and watching those now that they come out on the DVD box sets when you don't have the commercials and all that mess. So things like, I love Lost. Is probably my favorite show on TV right now, and I'm getting into the show Mad Men, so that's fun. And but I mostly have fun when I do go out with other people. So I'm very much a kind of just go out to a bar, you know, go out to a place. I don't like to go anywhere and then feel like rushed to get home. So I'm the kind of person that will leave and go at 8 o'clock and then kind of sit there and sip and slowly, you know, hang out with people when people come and go until late into the hours. So that's probably my favorite thing to do, just to go out with people. Go to concerts, too, would probably be the other fun thing I do.
Has anyone ever told you that you resemble a particular celebrity?
Probably the shortest answer, no. I've never heard from anyone that I look like any celebrity, and I guess that's rare. Most people get some kind of comparison, but not that I know of.
Evaluate a significant experience, achievement, risk you have taken, or ethical dilemma you have faced and its impact on you.
I guess this would be an experience and somewhat of a risk, too, but I, after I got my master's degree, I wanted to go on to continue my doctorate degree, but I needed to build my language skills, in German specifically. And so I wanted to learn German, and I figured what better way than just moving to Germany. And an American can only go there for 3 months, so I went there for the 3 months, and I took a language course while I was there, but I was going to have to go back. And I found basically that if you were a student, though, if I could get into school there, then I would be able to stay. But the only problem was I had just begun learning German, so I would be sitting in the classrooms and doing everything would be only in German. And so I filled out all the application, and I really wanted to stay because I was having so much fun in Germany beyond just learning and things like that. And I expected I had to take some kind of test to show that I knew German, and the registrar, you know, the academic official there, sent me an email. It says, well, you don't need to take the test, but I just need to know, do you think that you can follow all the lectures and do all the assignments in German? And so I could not by any means at that point in time, but I said, yeah, absolutely, no problem, you know, I'll have no problems with this. And so I kind of got myself into starting a new school that I really had no intention of doing any, you know, getting a degree from or anything. I just wanted to be able to stay with a visa. But, you know, in this foreign language that I had just really started to learn. So that was kind of a culture shock and a pretty crazy experience, but it was worth it.
Choose a prominent person, living, deceased, or fictional, whom you would like to interview and explain why.
I would say a deceased, prominent person whom I'd like to interview would be the writer Albert Camus. He's one of my favorite authors, and he's one of the authors that I read at a fairly young age. And I think a lot of times the first really great book that you read as a younger person kind of like is what gets you interested and piques your interest in continuing on with more of that kind of thing and more learning. And also, he just had a really fascinating life, you know, growing up in, not in France, even though he's a French writer, he grows up in Africa. And so he then comes to France much later, and so he has this kind of, I almost want to say multicultural perspective. And then, you know, he was active in the resistance against the Nazis, and, you know, was in a lot of danger with that. And then, when all the rest of his friends were kind of supporting the Soviet Union, he turned against them and said, no, I don't think what they're doing is right either. So he was basically kind of stood up for human rights and things like that way before this was like a popular thing to do. So I think he's just an interesting figure and just a phenomenal writer, and I'd love to kind of talk to him.
First experiences can be defining. cite a first experience that you have had and explain its impact on you.
Probably an important first experience I had would be my first day of junior high school. And I would say the reason why that is, and it's one of those kind of funny, weird moments in your life that you never know. You face kind of two paths, but you don't know it, and you end up taking one, and you kind of look back on it, which would be, basically, I had all these friends that I knew from, you know, elementary school, and these kind of childhood friends and things like that, but, you know, when you feed into a junior high school, there's new people and coming from different schools, and that very first day, I kind of met two different groups of friends, basically. I had my old group of friends I've known for the longest time, and then I met these other friends that, you know, I was starting to make that day, and, you know, we all wanted to hang out and do things, and it was almost kind of starting with that very first day, I kind of said, I'm going to branch out and try something different, which is a little different for me. I'm usually go with the safe bet normally, but not in this case, and I started making friends with these different people. And as it turned out, the friends I had from before kind of, you know, they really went nowhere, and but the friends I made turned out to be lifelong friends. And most people meet their lifelong friends not in junior high school, but I did, actually, and it was all kind of this, all changed on this first day. So it's kind of like a first experience, I'd say.
Recall an occasion when you took a risk that you now know is the right thing to do.
Well, I could, you know, I could cite definitely the risk of what happened in Germany, but I guess I could pick a different risk that I knew would be the right thing to do also. I would say a risk that I took that turned out to be the right thing to do a long time down the road would be my choice of where I went to college as an undergrad, because most of the people that I knew were all going to in-state schools, you know, whether they were public or private. The state that I'm from, there are just a lot of really great colleges and universities all in a very kind of close radius to each other. And so this is, I guess maybe this is almost another case like before, where I kind of had a choice to go to, you know, still go to a great university, but go to one that would be around the same people that I grew up with, the same high school, or I could go far away. Yeah, and so I chose to go to, which, you know, took me far, you know, away from my home, but basically forced me to be in a totally new environment and to meet people that I otherwise would have, you know, different types of people I otherwise would have never met before. So I guess that was a risk, and then it's turned out to really pay off. And that just the education I got there and the experiences I had there has propelled me on to continue on with school, and it's always been a kind of a strong point of, I guess, my resume and things like that too.
Is there a work of art, piece of music, scientific phenomenon, mathematic theory, or a piece of literature that has surprised or unsettled or challenged you, and in what way?
This is actually, I guess, a kind of along that lines, but it's going to be an argument that I ran into basically in philosophy, which was one of the things that I studied. And it was this very unsettling idea that none of our, basically we're kind of like pre-programmed, you can say genetics or you know, whatever, we're kind of pre-programmed to do everything that we do. And the whole world is kind of already been determined so that the things that we think are our choices are actually, we really had no choice. It was always going to be that way. And I think this is just a very, it's something that has a lot of evidence on its side and a lot of really strong arguments on its side, but you definitely don't want to believe it. Like, you don't want to believe that everything you do has already been predetermined. You want to think that, you know, I'm free to decide who I am, and I'm not just going to turn out exactly how my genetics or exactly how, you know, cause and effect says that I'm going to turn out. And so this has been something that it's always kind of there in the back of it. It's a very unsettling idea that makes you start to call into question all kinds of important beliefs, and to stir you, I think a lot of times the good thing about unsettling ideas is they stir you to reconsider your own beliefs, not to get rid of your own beliefs, but to think more firmly about, well, how do I know what I'm saying is right, and how can I justify it, and if I do need to change something, what can I save of my old way of looking at things, and then what do I need to change?
Have you experienced a moment of epiphany, as if your eyes were open to something you were previously blind to? Describe this moment and your percepts about it.
A moment of epiphany? I haven't experienced that, and I think that while we sometimes do experience that, it's my belief, and maybe this is my background as a historian, that most of the time, moments of epiphany are something that we come up with afterwards. Because I think people like to make a very neat story of the things that have happened to them, that has kind of like definite events and actions. And I think that most of the time that's kind of our memories making those things up to some degree afterwards. And that those moments of epiphany might be when you first kind of consciously realize something that you've been moving towards all along. So I guess the short answer is no, but not, but because that, you know, that it doesn't really happen very often in the real world. I think it's something that we like to tell ourselves afterwards.
Of everything in the world, what would you like to be doing right now?
Right now, I would love to be sitting, chatting with my friends that I made overseas in Colombia at a cafe, or maybe hanging out on the beach. I'm not doing that, unfortunately, but I hope to maybe be doing that sometimes in the future, taking a flight down. If I wasn't in Colombia, somewhere else in South America, hopefully it would be Argentina. I've made a lot of friends from South America, and I definitely want to come and visit them, so I think that would be where I'd want to be right now.
What is your approach to life?
I really think my approach to life is to not take things too seriously, and just to be open to the experiences that come to you. I do have certain like defined plans. Most of those are kind of career based plans, things that you have to plan for if you want to be able to do what I want to do. But on the other hand, I think a lot of times it's your ability to adapt to things when your plans don't go. I've already had several things, maybe when I was younger, that I thought I was going to be or thought I was going to do that didn't turn out that way, and then things that I had no idea were going to be possible to me that were the best opportunities I ever had. So I think being open to any kind of opportunity and kind of keeping yourself both open-minded and, you know, free enough to be able to pack up and move somewhere if you need to, or to change fields of interest and things like that. And I think that's the most important approach that you can take to life, is just being open to everything that it offers you.
What was the most difficult time in your life? How did you overcome these difficulties? How did your perspective on life change as a result of the difficulty?
The most difficult time in my life would be kind of immediately following the breakup of a long relationship that I was in. I was with someone for 5 years, and when it didn't work out in the end, you know, I was obviously, like anyone would be, I think, in that situation, I was pretty devastated by that, and was, you know, didn't leave, you know, left the house to go to work, and then came back home, and then sat there in my house for a month. And I think the main way that I overcame those difficulties were, I reached out to friends, particularly a lot of times. I think when you're in a relationship, you kind of, it's just natural, you devote less time to people, and some friends you fall out of touch with who aren't maybe close by. And so I got a lot out of kind of like reconnecting with people that I hadn't maybe spoken with in a long time, or hadn't been as close to as I used to be. And so that kind of helped me through that. And then just time, you know, you kind of see everything in perspective. And in terms of like how my actual perspective on life changed, once I got over the initial, you know, hurt feelings and things like that of it, and you're able to kind of look back on the good times, you realize that things in life don't last forever. You know, it's rare that like you meet someone and then you fall in love with them and you know you're with them forever, or it's rare that you You know, you find something that you love doing, and you can do that forever. And so I guess my perspective on life is just kind of to accept the impermanence of the things of life and to appreciate the way in which people or experience in your life are kind of like seasons, and they change, and you have to enjoy those things while they last, knowing that they're not going to last forever.
Describe your most rewarding experience.
My most rewarding experience was the time that I spent in Germany, because it was just a different way of life. Living in America, I've always lived in an apartment, you had a car, and everything that I did was always kind of like me and maybe some friends, but it was small groups, and I've never experienced a really strong, you know, I wasn't like in a fraternity or something. We had a very strong sense of a large group. And I lived in the student housing. There is, I guess, a little bit more dorm-like for everyone. And so here I was, you know, I was older, but I was living with the group of other people, and they were all older also. So it was, you took people who don't belong in dorms, really, but you put us in a dorm life. And so we all bonded and formed just a really tight-knit group, and it stretched, you know, across every continent. The one thing that held us together, I guess the two things that held us together, was that we all spoke English and that we all spoke bad German. And so therefore, here we were all living in Germany, trying to get along in this country with our language skills and trying to develop our language skills and practice them together and things like that. But just the experiences that I had there were probably the most rewarding that I've ever had.
Did you have a favorite board game when you were a kid?
I was a board game fanatic as a kid, which once again, I think is something that is falling by the wayside as kids play Wii now and things like that. But I had a favorite board game, and it's a weird board game that I don't even think is all that fun now in retrospect, but I loved Clue. And there was a movie that came out, like a Clue movie, like a live-action one based on the board game, which I loved as a kid also. And I remember playing Clue after school, while my mom was still at work. I would go to daycare after school, and it was largely consisted of playing board games, and that would be my favorite one.
Who is your favorite actor?
I don't typically like the people who they decide are going to be like the leading men most of the time, the kind of like square-jawed action hero types and things like that. I like the weird actors who a lot of times play strange characters. But I'd have to say one guy who is, I guess, maybe a leading man but is my favorite actor would be Billy Bob Thornton. And I know it's a weird choice, but I just love everything that he's in. And I think that, for instance, Bad Santa, I think that's just genius. I love that movie. So I just think Billy Bob Thornton can play so many different types of characters, and I'd probably say he's my favorite actor.
What is your favorite dinner?
I love scallops. I love basically all seafood, but it's the Coquille Saint-Jacques.
What is the first thing you do in the morning?
The very first thing that I do in the morning, after I get up and put on some clothes, is I take my dog out because he's kind of like the most important individual in the house right now, much more important than me. So he kind of gets first billing, and then only after I've taken him out and kind of walked him, and then do I come back and I kind of start my day. So that'll be the first thing.
What is something you wish you could do but you can't?
I think the thing that I wish that I could do, probably, and there's a lot of things I wish I could do. Most of them artistic based, because I my stick figures don't look very good even, and I'd love to be able to play the guitar, but I think it would be sing. I will not sing into this microphone to show you that to prove that it's something that I can't do. But I think that would be something that I wish I could do. Is just I wish I could sing really well. I think that's awesome.
You are majoring in history. When did you first become interested in this field?
I first became interested in this field when I was an undergrad, and I had always thought that I was going to be a journalist, that I wanted to be a newspaper reporter, and so I was going to major in English or something like that to be a newspaper reporter. There was no journalism program where I went to school. And then I took a history class, mostly, you know, because everyone has to take a history class. And it was all the good things about kind of researching and reporting and all these things, but dealing with much more interesting events and much more dramatic situations, you know, in the past that led to kind of, I guess, the world that we live in today. And so it would be that first history course convinced me that this is something that I wanted to continue on with. And then just the good experiences that I had with that has made me basically stick with it till this day.
What are your plans upon graduation?
My plans upon getting my PhD would be to, you know, become a professor somewhere, anywhere, please hire me. So just to enter the job market, which is always difficult, but hopefully to get a tenure track job somewhere.
If you could choose any career, what would you be?
I wouldn't be an astronaut or a rock star or any of that stuff. I would actually be what I want to be now. And I guess if I wanted to broaden that out anyway, I would choose to be a writer. But that is kind of what you also do as an historian. But I would love to be someone who also maybe writes a novel or two on the side, just for fun. So just a writer in general, I guess.
If you could take a snapshot of your life 10 years from now, what would you be doing?
I would be, and this is, I guess, my dream type scenario, which is going to sound like a weird dream to most people, but I would be probably somewhere in an archive in Germany with a million musty old books surrounding me, and I'm hunting down, you know, the piece of this, the document that's going to prove my argument, and, you know, spending all day there digging through the sources and then getting out. And when I'm finished with work that day, then, you know, finding myself in a place that's got magnificent Gothic cathedrals and castles and cafes and hanging out at the local pub with friends and colleagues. I think that's where I'd see myself.
Tell me what you would consider a romantic evening.
I think, this could get a little longer, I think that the trick to really having things be romantic is that there's no one-size-fits-all romantic evening, that no matter whom it is that you're with, that, you know, dinner and a movie or whatever it is. I think the times when I felt like I was in a really romantic situation are all based upon listening to the little subtle hints and clues of the things that your partner is interested in. So with my girlfriend, it would be, like all guys, I've been accused of being a bad listener. And so it's the moments when you listen and work those into the evening. It's when you know when she is talked about, you know, some new place or talked about something that she wanted to do, but it was only in passing, and maybe it was a month ago. But when you work that kind of thing in, and this is going to sound weird, but one of the most romantic evenings I've ever had was going to an IMAX movie about dolphins, and it was just because. It was something that we talked about the first time we met before we were even going out or things like that. You know, she had talked about going to some dolphin exhibit. And just showing that you were listening and that you kind of remember those things, I think, is what makes things romantic, is that kind of concern.
What qualities do you look for in a potential mate?
I think what I look for specifically is someone who balances out my traits. Someone who is going to be the more outgoing person. Someone who definitely has a sense of humor, I think. I think, like a lot of guys, I would get my feelings hurt if I tell too many jokes that don't get laughed at. And I know that sometimes women have to laugh at bad jokes while they go out on dates. But I think other qualities, it's just I am personally more attracted to women who are strong. And very self-confident and not afraid to voice their opinions or feel like they have to, you know, kind of like cover up these ideas to get along with people. I want, you know, if I say something stupid, I want someone that I want to be with to say, that's stupid, you know, you're wrong. Yeah, in a nice way, but nonetheless to kind of be assertive and confident in that way. I think that's what I look for.
What is the nicest thing you could do for your significant other?
The nicest thing that I think you can do for your significant other is when it comes to those very difficult choices in which you have to make decisions that a lot of times are going to have some kind of drawback. You know, if you want to take a job that involves moving or something like that, I think the nicest thing you can do is to make sure that they realize, and to make sure they realize it because it's true, that their interests and what they want is every bit as important as what's important to you. And I think you have to let people know that they are your top priority if that's the case. And I think that if your significant other isn't your top priority, then I think that you need to, you know, you need to not lead them on into thinking that this, you know, the relationship you're in is more than it is. I think you have to be very honest and open with people, and the maybe the hurt feelings of that day or maybe that week are pale in comparison to the kind of thing that happens when someone wants to devote their life to you and you know don't put them as a top priority. So I think it's being honest with yourself about where the relationship is, and when the relationship is very serious, then you put them first and you put your own interests second.
Why did you decide to participate in this donor program?
Basically, you know, I was kind of in a transitional period where I moved here and didn't have a lot of money at first because I'm going to receive money from my school, but I didn't have it yet. And so it was something that was very flexible to be able to participate in. It paid well, and you were able to do something that was helping out all kinds of other people. And so I guess the easiest way was I didn't see any reason not to participate in it. It was, you know, there was a lot of individual, different, separate positive things, but there was no reason not to. I guess that was why I participated.
This concludes Donor Audio Interview 2928.